Betterton asked. He realized that trusting himself to this aged rummy might not have been a prudent move. If anything happened way out here, he'd be dead meat. There was not a chance in hell of his finding his way out of this swampy labyrinth.
"Nah," Hiram said.
He took another pull at the bottle and abruptly gunned the airboat into the left-hand passage. The channel narrowed still further, choked with duckweed and water hyacinth. The hooting and chattering of invisible creatures grew louder. They maneuvered around an ancient cypress stump, sticking up out of the muck like a broken statue. Hiram slowed again to negotiate a sharp bend in the channel, peering through a thick curtain of hanging moss that blocked the view ahead.
"Should be right up yonder," he said.
Goosing the engine gently, he carefully nosed the airboat through the dark, slime-choked passage. Betterton ducked as they pushed through the curtain of moss, then rose again, peering intently ahead. The ferns and tall grasses appeared to be giving way to a gloomy clearing. Betterton stared, then abruptly drew in his breath. The swamp opened into a small, roughly circular stand of muddy ground, ringed by ancient cypresses. The entire open region was scorched as if it had been bombed with napalm. The remains of dozens of fat creosote pilings rose, burnt and blackened, thrusting toward the sky like teeth. Charred pieces of wood lay strewn everywhere, along with twisted bits of metal and debris. A damp, acrid, burnt odor hung over the place like fog.
"This is Spanish Island?" Betterton asked in disbelief.
"What's left of it, I reckon," Hiram replied.
The airboat moved forward into a slackwater bayou, sliding up onto a muddy shore, and Betterton stepped out. He walked forward gingerly over the rise of land, pushing debris around with his foot. The rubble was spread out over at least an acre, and it contained a riot of things: metal desktops, bedsprings, cutlery, the burned-out remains of sofas, antlers, melted glass, the spines of books, and, to his vast surprise, the blackened remains of machines of unknown function, smashed and twisted. He knelt before one, picked it up. Despite the intense heat it had been subjected to, he could tell it was a metering device of some kind, brushed metal with a needle gauge measuring something in milliliters. In one corner was a small stamped logo: Precision Medical Equipment, Fall River, Massachusetts. What the hell had happened here? He heard Hiram's voice from over his shoulder, high-pitched, tense.
"Maybe we should be getting back."
Suddenly, Betterton became aware of the silence. Unlike the rest of the bayou, here the birds and insects had fallen still. There was something awful about the listening quiet. He stared down again at the confusion of debris, at the strange burnt pieces of metal, at the twisted equipment of unknown function. This place felt dead. Worse than that, it felt haunted. All at once, Betterton realized that he wanted nothing more than to get away from this creepy place. He turned and began picking his way back to the boat. Hiram, apparently possessed by the same thought, was already halfway there. They gunned out of the slackwater bayou, heading back through the narrow, twisting channels that led to Lake End. Once, just once, Betterton glanced over his shoulder into the dense green fastness behind him, shadow woven, mysterious, braided around and above by tree limbs and kudzu vines. What secrets it held, what dreadful event had transpired at Spanish Island, he couldn't say. But he was sure of one thing. One way or another, this shady bastard Pendergast was at the center of everything. Chapter 40. River Point, Ohio. In the middle-class Cleveland suburb, the bell in the tower of St. Paul's Episcopal Church tolled midnight. The wide streets were drowsy and quiet. Dead leaves skittered in the gutters, rustled along by a gentle night breeze, and somewhere in the distance a dog barked. Only a single second-story window was illuminated in the white clapboard house that stood on the corner of Church Street and Sycamore Terrace. Beyond the window, locked, nailed shut, and covered by two layers of heavy curtain, lay a room whose every corner was stuffed full of instrumentation. One floor-to-ceiling rack held Tier 1 high-density blade servers, numerous Layer 3, 48-port gigabit Ethernet switches, and several NAS devices, configured as RAID 2 arrays. Another rack held passive and active monitoring devices, packet sniffers, police and civilian scanner interceptors. Every horizontal surface was littered with keyboards, wireless signal boosters, digital infrared thermometers, network testers, Molex extractors. An ancient modem with an acoustic coupler sat on a high shelf, apparently still in use. The air was heavy with the smell of dust and menthol. The only light came from LCD screens and countless front panel displays. In the middle of the room sat a shrunken figure in a wheelchair. He was dressed in faded pajamas and a terry cloth bathrobe. He moved slowly from terminal to terminal, checking readouts, peering at lines of cryptic code, occasionally firing off a machine gun-like series of typed commands on one of the wireless keyboards. One of the man's hands was withered, the fingers malformed and shrunken, yet he typed with amazing facility. Suddenly he paused. A yellow light had appeared on a small device situated over the central monitor. The figure quickly rolled himself to the main terminal and typed in a volley of commands. Instantly, the monitor dissolved into a chessboard-like grid of black and white images. Incoming feeds from 24 security cameras placed in and around the perimeter of the house. He quickly scanned the various camera feeds. Nothing. Panic, which had flared up in an instant, ebbed again. His security was first-rate and doubly redundant. If there had been a breach, he would have been alerted by half a dozen movement sensors and proximity triggers. It had to be a glitch, nothing more. He'd run a diagnostic in the morning. This was one subsystem that could not be allowed to... Suddenly, a red light winked on beside the yellow one, and a low alarm began to bleat. Fear and disbelief washed over him like a tidal wave. A full-scale breach, with hardly any warning? It was impossible, unthinkable. The withered hand reached toward a small metal box fixed to one arm of his wheelchair, flicked away the safety toggle covering the kill switch. One crooked finger hovered over the switch. When it was pressed, several things would happen.